Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. I see that the density of the population in the audience slightly reduced, but I hope that my talk will be slightly interesting. And first of all, I'm grateful to the organizers for inviting me here to Santa Barbara, where I come here maybe 10th time or 9th time, always with great pleasure. Yes. And today, what I will do, I will talk about many-body physics with ultra-cold particles in disorder, mostly ultra-cold atoms. And here is the schedule of my talk, and significant part of this talk will be an overview of the studies, mostly experimental studies, of ultra-cold atoms in disorder. And when I present the original work of mine, it's done in collaboration with Boris Altshuler, Igor Aliner, and Vincent Michal. And what I see here is that Altshuler, who told me that he will surely come to listen to me, did not come. Okay. Anyway, before I start with, let's say, with the overview, let me mention one thing. Why do we study ultra-cold atoms and now also molecules in disorder? There was a lot of very interesting work for electrons in solids and many other things. Why do we have to do so? What happened is the following, that the origin of the problem lies in the physics of the so-called atom laser. What is atom laser? You go to a shop, you buy an optical laser, which we use all the time, for example. Right? Then what you do, at least theoreticians can do that, you replace photons by neutral atoms, and then you get an atom laser. It's a strongly correlated beam of atoms. And the idea was to have a magnetic waveguide, very narrow trap, very long, on a chip, and then you put metallic wires, and you get this trap, also put the magnetic field. This is a magnetic waveguide, atom waveguide. And then, just you may bend the metallic wires and focus this beam onto a surface and study its quality. And very, very, very quickly, it has been realized that since this is everything on a chip, it has imperfections, and this beam actually propagates in the presence of these impurities or disorder. And immediately, when people were first thinking of some applied research, it became clear that there are many fundamental things behind. And in particular, it became clear that one has to study how interaction between particles influences Anderson localization. So, yes, okay. So this is something what all of you know better than I do, yes? I only do disordered systems for a few years, maybe 5 or 6. And then, if you have many particle system in disorder, then transport and localization properties are very important. And then, within my drawing facilities, this is the disorder potential, and these are particles, yes? And then, according to Anderson, 1958, destructive interference of particle scattering from disorder potential leads to, let's say, attenuation of the wave function, exponential attenuation, and the wave function is localized in a certain region, which is called localization length. And there is an old question, how does the interaction between particles influence localization? It was crucial for charge transport in electronic system, and now it appears in a new light for disordered ultra-cold bosons, and now also fermions. Now, let me continue. So, actually, when the research on ultra-cold atoms in disorder has been started, there was something already known. Anderson localization of light, microwaves, sound waves, electrons and solids, and what is expected? Everybody can immediately say that what we expect is Anderson localization of neutral atoms. Yes? First, the experiments in 2 labs were not very successful, but eventually they succeeded. And the first lab which succeeded in observing Anderson localization of neutral atoms was the lab of Alain Aspect. He was in Orsay next to me, Yes, every morning I was jogging uphill to see whether experimental guys in his lab are already working or not. This was his request. Yes. Now they moved to Palazzo, to the campus of Ecole Polytechnique, and this is the experiment. What you do almost the same what people did in 1995, in order to identify Bose-Einstein condensation in a harmonic trap. These works of 1995 got the Nobel Prize in 2001. So what you do, you harmonically confine atoms in a trap. In the case of Alain Aspect, it was practically one-dimensional system. Yes, you strongly confine particles in two directions optically. Yes, then you put atoms which form Bose-Einstein condensate. Don't be surprised that I say Bose-Einstein condensate in a one-dimensional system. Yes, in the thermodynamic limit it's absent, but here it's a finite size effect, BEC due to a finite size effect. Then you superimpose a disorder, which in their case are optical speckles, yes, and then you get the density of BEC, which is slightly modulated by this relatively weak disorder. Then there is a question, what happens if you switch off the trap? So this green line goes away, but still keep the disorder. Without a disorder, these were first BEC experiments, we know that the gas expands, yes? Then, here, what happens? Does the expansion stop or not? If it stops, it means that there is a localization of particles. And then, this was the experiment in the group of Alain Aspect. You switch off the trap, the system first expands, and then you see stationary tails of the density distribution. And the shape of these tails could be explained by Anderson localization of non-interacting particles. No interaction between particles involved, because when they expand, the density is small. It's not important. So this was the first experiment, and it was the first manifestation of Anderson localization. After that, there were very many experiments in different directions, and here, within my knowledge, yes, I especially talked to Brian DeMarco, who is no longer here, and he confirmed that I mentioned everybody here. There are four groups, actually, now in the world. This is Alain Aspect in Palazzo, Inguscio and Modugno in Florence, Brian DeMarco group in Illinois, and Emanuel Bloch group in Munich, which very actively work on atoms in disorder, yes, ultracold. And then also Tillmann-Esslinger group in Zurich works actively on that. And there are several groups which occasionally did one or two works in this direction. And listening to the talk of Ben Lev yesterday at 3 o'clock, I should have probably added here the group of Ben Lev. So let me briefly mention, I will not discuss the work of the group of Emanuel Bloch and the work of the group of Brian DeMarco. Brian talked himself. Also, there was a talk from the group of Emanuel yesterday. But I would also mention, let's say, other experiments as an example. For example, the observation of coherent backscattering, which is a weak localization in the group of Alain Aspect. What you do, you launch non-interacting, practically non-interacting beam of atoms onto a two-dimensional disorder. This is the emerging momentum distribution, yes? And then what you see eventually is, this is the angular dependence of the density profile. You see these peaks related to the backscattering. Excuse me, yes. Then people were also trying to study, let's say, transition from the fluid state or superfluid state to a glass-like state. And one of the experiments in this direction was the experiment in the group of Tillmann-Esslinger in Zurich. You have a 2D disordered film of lithium-2 Feshbach molecules. Feshbach molecules are remarkable molecules. They're extremely fragile. They are having several microkelvin binding energy. These are highly excited molecules, but there is a strong interaction between them. So these are strongly interacting bosons, yes? In their case, the healing length of a Bose-Einstein condensate was of the order of the correlation length of the disorder. So this is here in this direction. There is narrow 2D channel, yes, with disorder. You launch the atoms, yes, and when you create the imbalance in one part compared to the other one, there is a current. And then what they see experimentally is how, for example, they increase the amplitude of the disorder and the current drops, yes? And they attribute this to sort of transition or a crossover, they don't know experimentally, from the superfluid state without a disorder, this Bose-Einstein condensated superfluid, to a glass-like state. That's, and they even draw a sort of dimensionless resistivity. That's what they do. And there was also the work of three groups on 3D Anderson localization of cold atoms and the measurement of the mobility age. Brian DeMarco discussed this extensively. I will not focus on that. Simply mention that similar experiments have been done in Palazzo by Alain Aspect and in Florence by Massimo Ingusho and Giovanni Madunia group. So it's the same as the experiment of Brian DeMarco. I would say that
Random.
It's random potential created by optical speckles in 3D. They can do it in 1D, they can do it in 3D, they can do it in 2D. They can do very many things. I'm even very often surprised how many things they can do. Then, the true disordered system is not the only one which has been studied experimentally. What people have done, and this was also one of the first experiments, right after the experiment of Alain Aspect, they even published their papers one after another in one and the same issue of Nature. This was the experiment of Lenz. This is Massimo Ingusho and Giovanni Modugno. What they did a one-dimensional quasi-periodic potential, which we call Ubrie-André or Ubrie-Asbel-Harper model. Yes, there is a deep lattice, one-dimensional lattice, and then and you superimpose an incommensurate shallow lattice. This is the equation which governs single particle states. J is the hopping amplitude from this side to the other one, neighboring one. V is the amplitude of the shallow incommensurate lattice. It is well known in this system that if V is larger than twice J, all single particle states are localized, and if it's the other way around, they are all extended, yes? And this was the first experiment. They were creating such a system in a shallow, big, one-dimensional harmonic potential, then switching off the harmonic confinement, and the gas was either expanding if the states were delocalized, or it was not expanding if the states were localized. That's how they proved Anderson localization, a la Anderson localization in this system. This system, it's not the true disorder, but what people say very often that it's in between a disordered system and ordinary lattice, yes? So, but they even did more, and this was one of the first experiments where the role of the interaction between particles manifested itself. In Lenz, in Florence, they do experiments with potassium-39. And this is a remarkable atom because people have investigated a lot of Feshbach resonances. I will not bother you with explaining what is the Feshbach resonance. Just simply, if people are interested in details, you can ask me later. Otherwise, I have no time to finish saying what I'm going to say. This is the following. You change the magnetic field, and changing the magnetic field, you change the interaction strength between atoms, yes, the scattering length. And then what they see, this is the interaction constant. It's a Hubbard model divided by J, and this is the disorder, yes? So, and then this red line shows that they obtain a border between the insulator state and the fluid state. And they identified this line by measuring the momentum distribution. Yes?
In this picture before, are those error bars just statistical error or instrumental error? I mean, why are they so big?
Oh, because it's a very difficult experiment.
Yes.
Why have so many points? Why don't you?
Huh?
Can you? I guess I never understood whether these people just fundamentally cannot reduce the density of sampling and reduce the error bars, or is it because their experiments somehow is.
The experiment is very difficult. And what is also difficult in this experiment to control the temperature, yes? And then these are statistical error bars plus instrumental and so on. Yes, that's what I would say. But we are even lucky that they have this, yes, even with these error bars showing the presence of the transition, yes? So what I am going to say now is that the things that I have mentioned, yes, they were more or less expected, like Anderson localization of neutral atoms, more or less expected that it should happen. Coherent backscattering also. Then insulator fluid transition is a bit less trivial, but that's what they, by the way, attributed their work to zero temperature, yes, although it's not completely true, yes. So which is also. But you know, the thing is, but this was already one of the last steps in experimental studies. So, and this insulator fluid transition, especially in a 1D system, is something which was not directly expected. Why? Imagine that we have one-dimensional disordered bosons at a finite temperature, not zero temperature. This is my disorder potential, these are my atoms. Then what we know from the books on statistical physics, I call it here dogma. Why I call it dogma? Because Boris Altshuler told me that this is dogma, yes? Then, there are no finite temperature phase transitions in 1D since all special correlations decay exponentially. And the phase transition means that there is appearance or disappearance of long-range order or at least long-range correlations. But what has been said by these people, I will tell you later who these people are, that there is an unconventional phase transition between two distinct states, fluid and insulator, and it's interaction-induced transition. So who is Alainer, you know, he left. Who is Altshuler, you also know, he is here. And who is this GS? This is the one who is in front of you, yes? Okay. Yes. Quick question. Yes.
Does the dogma preclude having a liquid gas transition in one dimension, a first order liquid gas transition?
Yes.
Yes.
Because why? There are no divergent correlations. There are no long range correlations.
Maybe we can talk about this slightly later. Yes. Let me now continue. And why this is true? Actually, here I will be very brief. Does everybody remember the talk of Igor Alainer, which he gave on the first day of the conference?
Yes.
You do? Good. So, because he talked about this many-body localization, delocalization transition. Very simple to understand. Do not know what Igor said, because on the first day I was absent. But let us imagine that we are in the localized state. For example, in 1D, all single particle states are localized, whatever their energy is. And then let us understand how different states of two particles, alpha, beta, hybridized due to the interaction. The probability P over epsilon alpha that a given state alpha, that for a given state alpha, we have states beta, alpha prime, beta prime, such that alpha beta and alpha prime beta prime are in resonance or almost at resonance, which means that there is a matrix element of the transition due to the interaction exceeds the energy mismatch. On the length scale of the localization length, we can never match the energy conservation exactly. Therefore, there is always a mismatch. So these are my alpha beta, alpha prime beta prime. Very simple to understand. Imagine two states, yes? Then, what the interaction does, it hybridizes them. And we know that if the matrix element of the interaction is comparable with the energy splitting, then the resulting quantum mechanical state is strongly hybridized. And then there is an extensive discussion of all this in this work, which has been done some years ago, which says that then, if this exceeds this, we have an extended state. One can show that this is efficient if these alpha prime alpha and beta prime beta, they coincide with each other pairwise. Then the matrix element of the interaction is the interaction strength multiplied occupation number for the state beta multiplied lattice constant divided by the maximum of the localization length out of all these four states. If I have a continuum case, A multiplied U is just coupling constant G, the mismatch, the energy mismatch between these states, it's nothing else than epsilon alpha plus minus epsilon alpha prime minus epsilon beta prime, which is unity divided by the minimum value of localization length multiplied density of states. Not more than that. In the end, what I simply do, what is the probability that the matrix element exceeds the energy mismatch and I get delocalized state, extended state? It's just the ratio of this guy to the other guy written on the previous slide. Then I have to make a summation over the states beta alpha prime beta prime, and I obtain this integral. Yes? And then the critical coupling strength you see is obtained from this relation, assuming that this guy is of order one. And that's what it is. And this criterion can be easily used, for example, for one-dimensional bosons. Yes.
In Igor's talk, there was an extra logarithm. So you don't get a logarithm this way.
No.
Right. So you overestimate the size of the insulating.
No. The thing is that let me show you this logarithm later. Yes. Okay. I will show it. It will be shown later. Here, for example, let's consider 1D bosons. For example, if there is no disorder, we know that at temperature larger than the temperature of quantum degeneracy, we have classical gas. At extremely low temperatures, we have what we call quasi-BEC, yes, where it's almost Bose-Einstein condensate with a very, very long coherence length, yes. And then there is a degenerate thermal gas here, where it's not quasi-Bose condensed, but it's quantum degenerate. And gamma is the interaction parameter, the ratio of the mean field interaction divided by the degeneracy temperature. We consider gamma much smaller than one now, weakly interacting regime. Then, what are disordered non-interacting 1D bosons at a finite temperature? So this is my disorder potential, these are my particles. We know that in 1D, all single particle states are localized, so whatever temperature or energy is, we get localized states, Anderson insulator. And I, of course, do not discuss the pathological case of disordered bosons non-interacting at zero temperature when they drop to the just deepest potential well. Yes? Okay. So, what to do? Now, what we can do, we can show that interacting 1D bosons show the intermediate behavior, either this or that. What we can do, we can make a plot of the density of states, which has unit divided by square root of energy dependence, that energy is larger than the characteristic energy related to the disorder, this epsilon star, which I didn't write. I have written it here. It's amplitude of the disorder, correlation length of the disorder, mass of particles. The localization length is proportional to energy. Again, that energy is larger than epsilon star. In a classical gas, the chemical potential is known what it is. T is temperature, lambda T is thermal de Broglie wavelength. And then using this formula written above, yes, just substitute here everything what is written there, I obtain that the critical coupling constant is unit divided by square root of temperature. In the quantum decoherent regime, it's again, but unit divided by temperature. I can also discuss the quasi-BEC regime and obtain that the critical coupling strength multiplied density is just the disorder energy epsilon star. That's what it is. So in here, what we can do, we can make a plot of the phase diagram. So here is temperature, here is the amplitude of the disorder, and here there is a fluid phase, here is the insulator. And then there is no difference between the red curve and the blue curve. It's just for fun, because this is just quasi-BEC and this is thermal gas. And what is also quite understandable here, that if I plot the dependence of the critical coupling strength as a function of temperature, I see that when I increase temperature, the guy decreases. Yes? That's what we obtain. And this is what we more or less understand. If I heat the gas, it's easier and easier to delocalize particles. Yes? That's what it is. Now, what I'm going to do, I'm going to say a few words about strongly interacting bosons. Because what I did right here, I was discussing the case where the interaction is weak. The mean field interaction is much smaller than the degeneracy temperature. What happens if this is the other way around? What you can do, you can map strongly, repulsively interacting bosons in 1D on weakly, attractively interacting fermions. This is my bosonic Hamiltonian, which in the absence of disorder is the Liebliniger model, and it maps onto this. Yes? Right? The dimensionless coupling constant, which is the ratio of the fermion-fermion interaction to the Fermi energy, is just unity divided by this parameter gamma. Yes? And we consider the case of a weak disorder where the disorder energy is much smaller than the temperature of quantum degeneracy, or Fermi energy. Yes? So, then, here, I go back to Basco, Alainer, and Altschuler. Yes? And here is the formula with logarithm. Yes? It's here. But here, what is standing here is the, level spacing on the length scale of the localization length, which is inversely proportional to the transport time tau. So far, so good. What we know from literature is that the interaction between 1D fermions renormalizes the disorder. I can work out this tau and obtain the transition temperature using the same technology which was shown before, that it's the formula related to the disorder, amplitude D related to this gamma. And then, this is for degenerate fermions. You see here, quite remarkably, that TC vanishes at this gamma equals to 8, which is consistent with the old work of Giammarchi and Schultz, because gamma equals 7.9, there is a slight difference, 0.1, is related to the Luttinger parameter, 3/2, so that for k smaller than 3/2, or gamma larger than 7.9, all states are localized, whatever the disorder is. And here, for temperatures larger than the temperature of quantum degeneracy, classical gas, we employ the single particle picture and get this result. Yes? Then, what I can do, I can show you here. This is the previous result for weakly interacting bosons. This is the result for a strongly interacting case. Amplitude of the disorder, temperature. This guy here plot shows amplitude of the disorder versus gamma at temperature tending to zero. You know, you are here in the insulator state at small gamma. You increase the interaction. You become fluid, superfluid, and then you re-enter the insulator phase. For temperature tending to zero, this was more or less understood combining together the work of Giammarchi Schultz here, the work that people did at zero temperature here, and numerical calculations here. Yes? What we say that this type of behavior is valid at any finite temperature. And this is absolutely clear from this graph. This is the weakly interacting part. This is the strongly interacting part. So you start, gamma is the interaction between particles. This is the transition temperature. So you start here at any temperature. You are in the insulator state. Then you cross the transition line. You become fluid. And then you re-enter the insulator state. And this type of behavior is valid at any temperature. Yes, and this is the point that I would like to bring. for strongly interacting bosons. Now I would like to have a look in my time schedule. The chairman is still quiet. Yes, so what I can do two things. I can tell you what I was already telling people at the workshop here when I was a participant of the workshop in October about certain things in, let's say, this André Aubry model. And maybe if I have time, I will tell you about popular molecules. Let us see how it works. So, André Aubry model. Now I am considering this guy. Yes? I am now considering deep 1D lattice, shallow incommensurate lattice superimposed. J is the hopping amplitude in the deep lattice, and V is the amplitude of the shallow lattice. Now, people have done an enormous amount of work on this subject. Yes? And for example, the remarkable work has been done by Aubry André in 1980, I think. Yes? This is an absolutely remarkable work published in the Journal of Israeli and Physical Society. No one knows why, including the authors, but that's what it is. Ah, okay.
And that's the proceedings of the meeting.
Okay, so.
So it shows that a good paper doesn't matter when it's published. It's,
yes, but it's an absolutely remarkable paper. What they have shown, without any numerics, that localization length for all eigenstates is the lattice constant divided by logarithm of V divided by 2j, so that if V is close to 2j, the localization length is unique divided by V minus 2j. It's much larger than the lattice constant, yes? Single particle states, for the parameter kappa much smaller than 1, and parameter kappa is the ratio of the periods. This kappa much smaller than 1 means that the period of the incommensurate lattice is much larger than the period of the initial lattice. It consists of narrow bands, these clusters, yes? And then that's what it is. And this is for non-interacting particles, yes? There are several tens of papers on this subject, and that's what it is. For interacting bosons, we put the interaction energy in the Hubbard form. U is the Hubbard interaction constant, yes? And then we again employ the many-body localization, delocalization transition technique. Then, for this case, where kappa is much smaller than 1, the number of clusters is unit divided by kappa. The width of a cluster grows exponentially with energy. And if this N1 is smaller than the localization length, then this is the number of states of a given cluster participating in MBLDT. At temperatures much smaller than the width of the energy spectrum, which is AJ, only the lowest energy cluster participates. Why? Look here. The width of this cluster is much, much smaller than this one, this one, this one, this one, which means that the density of states here is much, much larger. And if I look at the many-body localization, delocalization criterion, here it's rho, and then here another rho, so it's rho squared. Yes? That's what it is. And then the criterion looks like that, rho squared. The occupation number of particle states is given by this one, yes? And then this is the normalization condition, filling factor, yes? Occupation number, density of states. At zero temperature, it's very easy. We have this energy plus interaction divided by the localization length equals to chemical potential, which means that the occupation number is this one for energy smaller than the chemical potential, zero otherwise. And we get a critical value of the interaction strength for the delocalization transition here, which is also valid if temperature is much smaller than the distance between the clusters. Yes, that's what it is. But we can continue and derive the result when temperature is much larger than the distance between the clusters. Then my formula for the occupation numbers becomes algebraic if they are large, yes, and remains exponential if they are small. And then I get a critical value of the interaction strength as a function of temperature. So far, so good. There is a very nice formula. So nothing really surprising. But what is remarkable is that when I increase temperature, I need a larger interaction strength to delocalize particles. The higher is the temperature, the more difficult it is to delocalize particles. Yes? Anomalous temperature dependence. Because we saw for one-dimensional disordered bosons that everything is normal. I increase temperature, and then a smaller and smaller interaction strength is needed to delocalize. Here it's the other way around. And there is, let me present a plot, yes, here. The single particle problem was solved by exact diagonalization. Don't think that this is me who really did numerics, yes. This is Vincent Michal, yes. So what you see, that increase in temperature favors the insulator state. We call it freezing with heating. You are in the fluid phase, and then you enter the insulator phase. Three different colors correspond to three different values of the filling factor. And then, why this is happening? Look here. You know, when temperature is still much smaller than the energy width of the spectrum, only low energy particles in the low energy cluster participate in the localization-delocalization transition. I increase temperature, and then if it is larger than the distance between clusters, then particles from here come here, here, here. The number of particles in the lowest energy cluster becomes smaller. Therefore, larger interaction strength is needed to cause delocalization. That's what it is. And one could think that this is maybe an artifact of, the fact that we assume that the shallow lattice has much larger period than the initial one. But what we did also is the calculation for the golden ratio, where the ratio of periods is square root of 5 minus 1 divided by 2. Mathematicians call this golden ratio because they think, do not understand why, do not ask me questions, that this system, with this ratio of periods, it models best of all the disordered system. Don't ask me why. Probably Schmoll knows, yes, because he knows these things very well, but not me. And then you see a similar type of behavior. Fluid, increased temperature, become insulator. Yes, that's what it is. And we call it freezing with heating phenomena. I remember that when I was giving a public lecture, I gave an example. Take a glass of water, yes, and what we know is that if we heat it up, what we get is either hot water or water vapor. You heat it up here, and instead of hot water, you get a piece of ice. That's what it is. So here, I would say that I will be a little bit careful, but what I would say here that 1D bosons is a promising system to study the many-body localization-delocalization transition, and atoms in quasi-periodic potentials are absolutely remarkable because increasing temperature may favor delocalization. I have to say now thank you for attention, but the chairman was so kind that he told me that if I speak 45 minutes instead of 40, he will not blame me very strongly. What I have done so far, I discussed neutral atoms in the ordinary disorder, in quasi-periodic potentials, and so on. But what people do nowadays, they also do experiments with molecules. And this produces a new system. What people do, in particular at GILA, they make an optical lattice. These people can make polar molecules. Polar molecule is a more, in their case, it's rubidium, rubidium potassium, but people also now do sodium rubidium and so on. Yes, molecule has a dipole moment if it does not rotate. What you do, you throw these particles in an optical lattice. An optical lattice is deep. When they get there, they randomly occupy lattice sites, And the lattice is so deep that they don't tunnel. They just sit in their lattice side. But then what you do, and that's what you can do experimentally, yes? Let experimental people correct me if I say wrongly. What you can do, you can excite one of these molecules by using, for example, Raman pulse from the ground raw vibrational state, means the state with the rotational moment J equals zero, to the first excited state with J equals one. So what you have one molecule in J equals one and others in J equals zero. And there is a non-radiative excitation transfer. These particles interact via dipole-dipole interaction so that this guy becomes ground state and this becomes J equals one, excited. And the amplitude of this interaction is unity divided by distance in the power of three. Yes? So what happens here is that if I create, let's say, excited state here, this excitation starts to propagate. It comes here, 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 and so on. And I have, this is the Hamiltonian, yes? I did not put here dipole moment in the square and so on because it doesn't matter. These are creation annihilation operator. And one can analyze this problem by, for example, doing the spectrum of fractal dimensions, yes? These are moments, yes? This is Q. And this guy is proportional to n number of molecules in the power of minus tau. And then I introduce the function f over alpha. Vladimir Kravtsov gave a talk on all this morning, yes? And then you calculate this spectrum of fractal dimensions, f over alpha. And then what you see is that in 1D and 2D, all eigenstates are localized, algebraically localized, because this is a remarkable problem. There are Levy flights or long-range hops. Unit divided by R cube, you may hop from here to the end of the system, yes, or to a very large distance. Therefore, the localization is algebraic, and in 2D, the localization length is likely to diverge at energy tending to zero. Then F over alpha behaves like that, which according to our knowledge of the problem, the slope is smaller than 1/2, and it indicates that there is a localized state, yes? In 3D, the situation is very different because the power with which the hopping amplitude decays is equal to the dimension of the system. It's a critical state. What happens is, it's already established, that all states are extended. This is a typical picture for F over alpha, which shows this is a very interesting formula. How it is called? Mirlin-Fedorov. It's very nicely satisfied. And this picture shows that there are extended non-ergodic states. And there is still a question whether there is a transition from extended non-ergodic states to extended ergodic states with increasing, for example, the filling factor. We were first responding positively to this question, but now it again became a question, therefore we did not put the paper on the archive. Yes, we are still resolving this problem, whether there is a transition in this case. But at least it's a very nice system for a small filling factor. It's absolutely clear that we see all extended non-ergodic states in the system, yes? Now, I would like to say that the experiment is not yet that far, but they're approaching to do this type of dynamics experimentally. For example, people at GILA are ready to do that, and other people like Martin Sverlein at MIT. All people who have this ground state polar molecules, ground state, I mean ground electronic state, yes, are ready to do these things. Wolfgang Ketterle produced lithium sodium molecules recently. He can also do these things. So there is a realistic problem to be solved. Now, I thank our chairman for the patience, and I thank you for attention. Thank you.
So in this last part, the problem you're solving is just one over R cubed hopping?
Yes.
So there, it's not a dipolar hopping. In other words, are there directions in which the hopping vanishes?
Ah, yes, yes. I did not, what actually, yes, I can tell you this. Here, I did not put the angular dependence. What we have done, we have solved with the angular dependence unity minus 3 cosine squared theta, of course. But what is also present here, that if I remove the angular dependence, yes, then qualitatively nothing changes, at least in our calculations.
Usually, if you have critical things, aspect ratio, the fact that it's 2 and 1.
Yes, but there are many, it's 3D, so many directions, so it's...
More questions?
So with those F of alpha results that you were showing, are they averaged over all the states in the spectrum, or...
Which results?
Well, it's on one of the slides near this one, I think.
Ah, is it... You mean those ones?
Probably the next one.
The next one.
3D.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes.
So is that averaged over the whole spectrum, or is it from a particular part of the spectrum?
This is for a given energy.
And how does it change with energy?
Qualitatively not much. If the filling factor is small, now we are convinced that our results are correct up to filling factor 0.2. Then the picture is similar for energy equals zero, energy equal point something, and so on. Yes? So they do not change much.
Okay, then if you go to bigger filling factors, what changes?
If I increase the filling factor, this curve a little bit shrinks. Yes, right. Therefore, we were suspecting that maybe there is a critical value of the filling factor where there is a transition to ergodic state. For ergodic state, F equal 1 at alpha equal 1, and it's minus infinity for other alphas, which you know much better than me, yes? But that's what it is. So far, the problem here is that finite size effects are very, very, very crucial. You have to increase the number of particles very, very strongly in order to, let's say, make good extrapolations to the thermodynamic limit and so on. Yes?
For the Aubrey-Andrea model, what are interactions doing in the localized regime and in the critical regime? And second, I assume you did an infinite system without a trap. What will the trap do if you do it in the experiment?
Okay, so what the interactions do in the Andrea-Ubri model, for example, what we start with is, maybe I should go back to this part. No, here. What we do, we start in the localized regime, where V is larger than 2J, yes? Right? V is larger than 2J, but not much larger. And then, what the interactions do, they induce delocalization. They turn localized states to extended. This is what they do, repulsive interactions. What happens if I consider a harmonic trap? The honest answer is, I don't know. Perhaps the density profile plays a little bit of a role and so on. But I do not see immediately why there should be qualitative changes. Yes? At least I do not see.
So, the localized, but will you then have a band structure, like you indicate here?
Yes, yes. Yes, yes. Yes, yes, because we are considering the weakly interacting regime, yes. The case of strong interactions for this system has been done by other people who did the MRG, and they also... The thing is that the work on the Andrea-Ubri lattice, which was including a heavy numerical work with the MRG, it has been done in collaboration of the group of Giovanni Modugno, Massimo Ingusho, with Thierry Giammarchi and Guillaume Roux. Guillaume Roux is the guy from my institute, and he is a specialist in DMRG. Of course, what they can do nicely is DMRG at zero temperature. DMRG at a finite temperature is a big question. But they have done that, and they have identified insulator fluid transition at a strong interaction and so on. Yes?
More questions?
Is your freezing by heating argument relying on having these gaps which we see there?
Yes.
So what happens when you remove the gaps? Or is there some critical, you know, substructure which will give you basically a constant value of the critical interaction?
I did not try to remove the gaps, but what I can tell you is that for some dependencies of the density of states on the energy, I also get, without any gaps, I get this anomalous temperature dependence. But unity divided by square root of energy, like for ordinary 1D bosons, is not sufficient. Should be unity divided by epsilon in the power bigger than 1/2.
So this freezing by heating transition, maybe other many by localization type transitions, what signatures does it have? Especially in the cold gas, cold atomic gas, somehow I'm wondering, do you think there's something like critical opalescence, or how do you detect it experimentally? Are there enhanced noise signatures, or because above that it's a boring liquid, below that it's a frozen
thing is that the honest answer is, how do you distinguish glass of water from the piece of ice?
Yeah.
Yes. So what they do experimentally, they can distinguish experimentally the insulator from the fluid. Yes, in this Andrea Ubrí lattice. The easiest way and the most trivial way is to switch off this shallow confining potential. The fluid state expands and the insulator state does not. But what they can also do, and that's what they have done, I think this has been done here, yes, they can address the momentum distribution. And from the momentum distribution, they identify whether you are in the insulator or in the fluid phase. Yes, that's what they can also do. Yes. So experimentally, what is difficult is to control the temperature. Yes, in this system. If you are able to control the temperature, let's say temperature is known within 10% of accuracy, then you are in. You can do these things. But so far, it was extremely difficult for them to control the temperature. Here, in this experiment, what they say is that the temperature is low, but it is known only within factor 2 or 3 or something. So, therefore, they attribute these results to more or less zero temperature. Yes? For which Guillaume Roux can do the MRG. Yes? That's what it is. The most difficult is to control the temperature.
How do you do the calculations? Which theoretical technique do you use?
Which what?
Theoretical technique do you use?
Which theoretical technique do I use? You know, the thing is that I think where it is, I think it's here. There is this many-body localization, delocalization criterion, which is used, yes? And in order to be consistent with some, Vincent Michal did exact diagonalization for single particle states in order to reproduce nicely the density of states and so on, and then address the localization. Yes, that's what he has done. The single particle problem has been solved by using exact diagonalization, not by me personally. I doubt whether I can do that. I once tried. It took me a very long time, but Vincent did it much faster. Yes?
I have one more naive question. So if you have this heating freezing by heating thing, so that, does that mean that in their experiment they can just take this lattice at low enough temperatures, just start shaking it, go for lunch, come back, and they're guaranteed to end up with a critical state?
Probably.
It stops heating above a certain.
The thing is that, you know, it's a one-dimensional problem, yes? In the one-dimensional problem, what I would do, I would first create a system at a very low temperature, let's say almost zero, yes? Let me go back to this freezing with heating business, because in 1D, you always have a problem with, let's say, temperature. Yes. So what I would do, if I were an experimentalist, probably experimentalists which are present here will reject me, yes. But I would create a system at a certain temperature by simply confining to 1D, do the experiment, then do the same, but confine at a higher temperature, yes, without shaking. Because if you shake the 1D system, you meet the problem of relaxation, and then people extensively discuss how the relaxation occurs, what is the distribution of particles, and so on. This is a little bit not clear. But if you just do the same experiment, but confining to 1D a system at a higher temperature, then this looks better. That's what I would do if I were an experimentalist. But I'm not. Maybe experimentalists will reject my ideas. I have plenty of ideas what can be done experimentally, but not all of them is done. And I'm happy that at least some of them are done. Yes?
The states inside the bands that are induced, that are induced basically by the interactions, are they periodic?
This I don't remember. I simply do not remember. I'm sorry. There are very few because we consider weak interactions. Yes, you mean that somewhere here? They are almost periodic, I think, but there are very few because in our case the interaction is weak.
Any more questions?
It's exactly 1 hour.
It's perfect. So
even without 2 minutes.
Okay, let's thank Jorge again.
Thank you. Let us use these 2 minutes for Sergei Flach to establish his computer. Ой, Сереж, подожди, я.